You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
I'm rolling.
So, got Jay with me. We're going to talk about podcasts. Not necessarily how to set up a podcast, although we'll touch upon that. But I want to talk about how to monetize a podcast or the activity of doing a podcast. And this includes everybody from people who have huge audiences to podcasters who have almost no audiences. So, Jay, for instance, you were telling me a statistic like a year ago. How many downloads per episode does the average podcast get?
I felt like, I mean, a year ago when I was in podcast movement, I saw the statistic as of June 2019. Median 50 percentile was 137 download per episode.
Only 137 download episodes is the is the median. That means the person, whatever podcast is unfortunate to be right in the middle of all 2 million podcasts in terms of downloads, that person only has 137 downloads per episode, which is sad, but that makes sense. I mean, A, some podcasts might be very niche. So if somebody is doing a podcast about left-handed fly fishers, then, you know, they don't deserve to have a high a large audience, but maybe they have the audience they want. So, right. You know, I think our audience, you know, I set up this podcast in 2014, really 2013. I recorded the first episodes and I feel like I was early on, not as early as guys like Marc Maron and Joe Rogan and so on, but early enough that this huge wave of podcasts hadn't yet existed. So we were able to get a nice large audience and develop our skills and build up a nice podcast. But I am here to say the good news, anybody, no matter what your downloads, can make a living or explore different ways to monetize a podcast. There are a lot of things that are valuable about a podcast. So I want to talk real quickly about why one should do a podcast. Then we could talk about very quickly some best practices for setting up one. And then we'll dive right into how to monetize all the different ways. I think I have like a dozen or more ways that you could monetize a podcast, and all of them apply to almost everybody. So in terms of why you must do a podcast, it's the same reason why anybody does any kind of content creation. Like, why would one want to have a radio show? Well, you want to do a radio show because you want to entertain your listeners. You want to learn things from your guests. You have a point of view about either public events or music or sports or whatever your radio show is about. And you want to express that point of view. You feel it's unique. You know, you always want to ask, who are you? Why are you? Why now? So who am I? I'm somebody who is interested in a large variety of topics ranging from entrepreneurship and investing to peak performance to all the different hobbies I have and so on. Why am I? I do like to entertain, and I guess, you know, there's some sort of dopamine-like feeling that I enjoy when I do a podcast and I have listeners and I get feedback and I get comments and so on. And I also like talking to all of my heroes. So it's an amazing thing when you can call up anybody who you admire and respect and say, hey, you want to come on my podcast? You can't call, like, I can't call William Shatner, Captain Kirk, or Garry Kasparov, the former world chess champion, and say, hey, Billy Shatner, I'd really like to talk to you for an hour and a half. Can you just stay on the phone and talk? He'll just hang up the phone right there. Or I won't even get his phone number. But when you have a podcast, you have this avenue to call your heroes and the people you're fans of. So I can call someone like Tyra Banks or Sarah Blakely or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and say, hey, you have a book coming out. I talk a lot about books. Would you want to come on my podcast? My listeners buy books and let's talk about it. So that's part of the why am I? And the why now is, well, the technology exists now. So I don't have to pitch a radio show. To pitch a radio show, I have to go to a radio company and somehow get in touch with the decision makers, which, by the way, is not so easy, and convince them that somehow their company, their radio station or their company, if it's Sirius XM, will benefit by having a show with me. And it's hard to do that. Maybe their schedule is full. They don't need a show from me. Or maybe they just, you know, have a show already like mine, or who knows? There's a million reasons why a radio station would reject a radio show you would pitch. But nobody can reject a podcast. A podcast is like, you know, like a radio show is like a beautiful bird kept in a cage. And a podcast is like opening that cage and letting the bird fly wherever it wants. A podcast is a radio show let out into the wild. And that's why it's such a popular format for people to start. So it's a great thing to start a podcast, but for the reasons I'm going to describe in a few minutes about not only monetization, but repurposing content, podcasts could be great for your career in many ways.
I just wanted to point it out. And also right now, if you're still on lockdown, you probably have more time to think about ways to start a podcast. You know, when you have 9-to-5 job and you have to go to into office every day, you probably spend like, what, 2 to 4 hours just to commute to work. So, you know, you wouldn't have time to think about starting a podcast or where the podcast direction should go. So this is probably the best time to start a podcast.
Right. You make a good point. People are home now, so they have more access to time and equipment to do a podcast. But also, it's worth noting that many people listen to podcasts during their free time. So the listener audience has increased for podcasts. Now, right. It used to be people listen to podcasts on their commute to work or on the gym. That was the most common places. But now, for instance, I just sit at home with my wife and family, and instead of tuning into Netflix, I tune into YouTube and listen to podcasts. Now, our podcast is not on YouTube. We're on all the different podcasting channels like Apple and Google, you know, Google Play or Stitcher or iHeartRadio or Spotify. But there's a million places you could listen to podcasts. I also want to ask, you not only help produce my podcast, but you're the engineer for Marina Franklin's Friends Like Us and right. Presumably other podcasts. Marina and I have different size audiences and plus different, you know, niches that we hit. And I'm more of an interviewer or storytelling podcast. And she brings her friends on, Friends Like Us. I've been a guest on her podcast.
Right.
And it's more about current events and, you know, race relations and race related topics. And so there's all sorts of podcasts out there. I do an interview podcast. You could do a podcast that's just you analyzing books you've read or right. current event stories that you've read, like Tim Pool, the Timcast podcast. I always see him just basically, he'll do a whole episode analyzing line by line an article he just read that day. Then there's podcasts like, you know, there are podcasts that tell fictional stories, like Serial right. type podcasts. There's also, and also that you can have very niche oriented podcasts. Like my favorite title for a podcast, and this is from 5 or 6 years ago, was a podcast, Denzel Washington is the best actor ever, period. Right. And I like how the period is included in the title. And the podcast is just about Denzel Washington. And in fact, I was going to do something similar with Mark Malkoff about Bill Murray, but we didn't have enough time. And so the one episode we recorded was, I think was like 30 episodes ago on this podcast.
Right. Yeah. And also like that was right on the verge of lockdown. So, you know, like once we recorded episodes and then all of a sudden, you know, all this happened. So that didn't continue. It's worth noting that like during this lockdown, the how-to and educations is probably like the most trending podcast out there. Like
really?
So
you're not like just saying that?
I'm not just saying it.
And just to explain to people, we are the number one ranking
right.
podcast for Apple in the how-to category for all time. I don't know what they mean when they say all time, but we're usually number one for the how-to category and number one for how-to: all time. I don't know what right. all time means.
I mean, we did have a couple meetings with like, you know, like Midroll or other agency. Like they did mention to us, like a lot of people are actually looking for how to right now. And if you're sitting at home, like you can binge a show, a radio show, as in like the drama podcast or serial podcast in a week. And then after that, what? You know, then it's done. And it takes a longer time to produce a serial podcast compared to, you know, the how-to podcast. You know, like our podcast, we can record today and then we can have it out by maybe tomorrow. Like serial podcast is not. Like they have to listen to the whole story. They have to plan out pre-productions. It takes like a week or maybe a month, months to produce a season.
I will say in general, and this is in terms of, you know, now we're going into the topic of how to make a podcast. There's several layers of production, and the more well-produced podcasts tend to get more downloads. I don't know why. They're probably shared more. They sound so good. They look so good. The content has been edited heavily. So like an hour-long, well-produced podcast might have 20 hours of audio recording and it's edited down to the best 1 hour of content. That'll probably have more downloads than, you know, the next level, which might be mine, where we don't really do that much editing, although we've got, you know, great topics, great guests, you know, high production value in terms of audio quality. And then the next level below that is where it's not that well produced and, you know, it's not that well marketed or whatever. But just to add, you can make a podcast right now. I can just take out the recorder on my iPhone and I can talk into it for 10 minutes and then I could upload it to Apple Podcasts not Apple Podcasts, but a distributor like Libsyn or Omni, and then they distribute to the 20 or 30 podcast distribution platforms, and that's it. Like all you need is just to record yourself for a few minutes, and you have a podcast.
Yeah, and that's the best way to test the water, right? Like if you always have this idea, you know, you don't know how to execute, you know, just do it. Like you know, we have a tons of guests on the James Altucher show say, you know, like you didn't think about what you do, you just do it. You just put it out there and then see the result. And then if it's good, and then, you know, like you do like 10 episodes and you see the download is great, then you can consider upgrade to a better equipment to get more downloads that way.
Yeah, right. Like I remember years ago when I was doing another podcast called Ask Altucher, sometimes I would get a question and I'd be in the car and I would just pull up my phone and my recorder and answer the question. And then literally while in the car, upload it. And that's a podcast. Now, did that podcast do as well as the James Altucher show? No, but it did about half as well. It wasn't so bad. I was doing Ask Altucher. I was doing
Question of the Day.
Question of the Day with Stephen Demner from Freakonomics. And I was doing the James Altucher show. And so we all decided, or I decided, to shut the others down and focus on the James Altucher show. And we've added episodes and it's just been a lot more fun. Although I'm always experimenting with new formats. Or if anyone has any ideas, please send me a message or put it in the reviews, like particularly on Apple Podcast reviews. What formats do you think I should try? A good idea list for me is when I try to figure out, you know, new formats. And in terms of production, I'll save that for another time, or maybe, you know, notes to this. But Jay, maybe you could just describe, right now I'm doing remote. We used to do it always in a studio, but now because of the lockdowns, we're comfortable doing it remote. Maybe describe all the equipment we use and what we recommend for our guests, because it's interesting.
So let's say if you have been doing podcasts for a while and then like you want to do remote, you know, with other guests and stuff, I always go the simplest route as possible and, you know, still get a good good sounding equipment as well. So like the one that I use and James is using, we have audio interface. Audio interface is a device that convert the audio from your microphones and convert it into a digital information data and send it to your computer so your computer can receive the sound. So we have this equipment called SSL2.
Solid State Logic is the company, I think.
They are very famous. Like they used to build a huge console they used by, you know, like by Snoop Dogg, by Jay-Z,
my peer group.
Yeah, your peer group. It's up there. So the device is very simple. Just two input, two outputs, and everything you see on the device, like the knob, the button, is what you get. So there's no hidden.
And then I have an SSL microphone, right? It's like a professional.
Right. So the microphones that you're using right now is called Shure SM7B. That's literally everyone is using it. Like, you know, in radio stations.
Shure, S-H-U-R-E.
Yep. SM7B.
So Charlamagne, who has the radio show The Breakfast Club and who I am working on an audiobook with, you're saying he uses the same microphone?
Yep. That's why when we were at his studio, like that's the microphone that he was using.
And what's this ambiance shield I have on the microphone.
So for James, because we are doing, James is going to be doing an audiobook as well. So the shield in front of James' microphone is called isolation shield. So what it does is mainly to prevent any echo coming back to the microphone. So what happened if he speak into the microphone and that isolation shield, they have a absorber's panel built into it. So the absorber panel is going to absorb the reflections.
Do you think it works? Like we've been using it the past few days. Do you think that my audio quality is a little better?
Yeah. So like I hear less echo. That's for sure.
And then camera, we just use a Logitech Brio camera.
Yeah, so for James, James has a Logitech Brio camera. I think that can record up to 4K, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm using C920 from Logitech. I can record up to 1080p.
What? Why don't you? Oh, is that better or worse than mine?
Well, the thing is, I got it 2 or 3 years before you got it.
Oh, so I'm
so
I'm
yours.
Better.
Yeah, yours newer and better. And then, of course, you know, on top of all that, the other very important thing is headphones.
Oh yeah,
especially for remote recording, like you need headphones. So the one that James has is Audio Technica brand headphones.
What is it?
Audio Technica.
Audio Technica.
Yep, Audio Technica, you know, they are a great company. They are mainly for consumer as well. And for me, I have a little bit more professional headphones. It's called Shure HR840. So I have a Shure headphones.
Why don't I have the more professional one?
I sent this to Robin, but Robin decided to go with the Audio Technica. Because mainly because remember during the lockdown, like all the e-commerce, they're having hard time shipping out stuff because there's no one working in the warehouse.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So that's the quickest one to get there.
All right, and then in terms of the software, we use Zoom sometimes, right?
Yep.
So Zoom, you're the audio engineer, so you're the one who sets up the recording. Does it send to you one composite file that has all the video and audio on all sides in it?
Yeah. So for Zoom, there's an option to choose to send individual files. So I can get composite files, you know, like all the files that combine together. It's like what you hear is what you get. And the other one, it's they also send me a multi-track. So like I get individual audio tracks and video.
And so this way you can all load it up in GarageBand or whatever software you have, and you could adjust the sound levels and improve the sound and eliminate you know, bad sounds and maybe improve the video and so on.
Yep. So with multi-track, that's another benefit of having multi-track is that let's say if you're done recording, you're like, I want to move the story around, so you can cut whatever durations you want and move the audio to maybe to a later time. At the same time, you're like, hey, this guy say hum a lot, you know, when the other person is talking, you can just cut it out. Or maybe your phone rang during the podcast, you know, and then when the other person is talking, so that I can just cut out your phone so it wouldn't be in the recording.
That's interesting. And so what software do you use for writing? GarageBand or something else?
So for me, I have, for me and Nathan, we are using something called Pro Tools. Nathan is also our editor and mixing engineer. So we have this software called Pro Tools.
Pro Tools.
So Pro Tools. It's what we've been using in studios in podcasting. There are also a lot of different editing software out there. Audacity is a free one.
And what's the free one?
Audacity.
And then so we use Zoom, but the quality of the video and the audio is good for like a phone call, but not really good for a podcast, right?
Right. So
like Nathan could always tell exactly what software we're using to record the podcast.
Oh yeah, for sure. And so this is what Zoom is using. Even though Zoom just implement original sound as in like, hey, you know, it's whatever raw sound that you go into. So yeah, they give you the raw sound, but you have to think about it. They have to decode. So the difference between analog and digital is that like analog is all voltage, right? So it's whatever you hear, whatever you get. Digital, it's all about one and zero. And however much one and zero in the data, determine how big of a size of your files is. Does that make sense?
Yes. When I talk a lot, there's a huge file size.
It also depends.
I've got
on
a lot
quality.
Of ones and a lot of zeros.
the thing is, like, so what Zoom is using, they are using what I call the lossy format. So because they compress so much, they want to make sure the file size is small, so they can have more streamlined and better bandwidth management files out there. So that's why the quality of the audio or the video, it's not as great.
Just to be fair to Zoom, Zoom's got 700 million users. Most of them are not doing podcasts, so they don't really care about, you know, upgrading their podcast side of their business. It's not a big point for them.
Yeah, and also in my opinion, for them to change that, they pretty much have to change the whole infrastructure.
So there are other platforms, which we'll get to in another episode, because we're actually releasing our own podcast Zoom-like software, which solves many of the problems of Zoom, but that's not what this podcast is about. So let's talk about the monetization of podcasts. And I'll start off with a little story. Jay, do you remember what episode I started doing ads? I'm going to find it right now. Hold on.
I think it's 140 or 108, I believe.
What? 108?
I know it's 100 episodes in. Because before that, you've been recording it in the apartment. And I think during then, like 100 episodes is considered pretty new.
Episode number 159. And the reason I know that is because it's with Derek Sivers, who I call the Zen Master of Entrepreneurship. It was such a great episode. And I was really flattered. He said, "You are the only podcast I am saying yes to." And he said, "You know why?" And I said, "Why?" And I was hoping he would say, "Because you're the best interviewer and I really wanted to talk to you and I really wanted to be friends with you. I hope we could be friends." He did not say that. He said, "You're the only good podcast out there that doesn't have ads." And I did not tell him during the podcast, and I felt bad about this, I did not tell him that that was going to be the first episode with ads. So we had ads starting from episode number 159. And here's the thing about ads. People debate, should I have ads? Should I not have ads? The good thing about ads is it sort of signals to your audience, hey, I've got a quality enough podcast that other people want to advertise it. So it's a kind of a weird sort of virtue signaling. It demonstrates that I have a sizable enough audience that people want to put ads, and this podcast is considered legit enough somehow by the advertisers that they want to place ads on it. So it's kind of a sign of professionalism, which is okay. Now, so here's how ads work. You can get ads by individually approaching them. I could call Microsoft and say, "Hey, could you want to advertise on my podcast?" Or you can go through a company like Midroll. Midroll is almost like an advertising agency or a media buying agency for podcasts. So all the advertisers go to Midroll and say, "We want to buy, you know, ads on 50 podcasts." Midroll helps them figure out what podcasts they want to buy ad space on, and then Midroll places them on us. And Jay, what's Midroll's take?
Whatever percentage it takes, it's different each podcast. So
I don't want to upset Midroll. Let's not say our percentage. So, when you have an ad on a media property, whether it's a blog or a YouTube channel or a podcast, advertisers pay in what's called CPM. So cost per 1,000 impressions. So, and this ranges all over the place, like, from $3 per CPM, which means for every 1,000 downloads you get, you'll get $3 to $100 per CPM, which means for every, if you have a 50,000 download podcast, you'll get 50 times 100. So whatever that is, like $5,000, that ad they'll have to pay $1,000 to advertise in your podcast.
Right. I just want to mention, like, there's a statistic saying that, like, the more niche your podcast is, the higher CPM.
Jay, I lost you.
Oh, do you hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Since we're using a platform which allows for recording on both sides, just because I lost you, I still get your audio.
Yeah, and also, see, this is where the multitrack comes in. Like, when James said, like, he lost me, but when I'm still talking, I can actually cut that part out.
Right. Let's not cut that out because we just talked about it. But what were you about to say?
I was about, what I was saying is that there's a study that says that the more niche your podcast is, the higher CPM you will get.
It depends on the niche though. Like if I were to do, if I were to do the CEO podcast and only CEOs should listen to this, that's right. probably a much higher CPM than like a pornography podcast or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, but when I say niche, I mean that, like, you know, that it's a product that you can sell. So let's say if you are doing a podcast about bees and honey, like, so those you get higher CPM because, like, you know that whoever listened to it will buy the product.
Why, when you're thinking of products, like, why was your first instinct bees?
Because that's in the studies that was the example that they gave.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. That's an odd example. Yeah, here's the one thing about ads, though, that I haven't seen anyone do this, but I do think, and I've actually suggested this to different people at podcast companies, which is that when someone puts an ad on my podcast, fine, they put the you'll hear the ad probably on this podcast. But I often say to companies, hey, I always write an article I often write an article about the podcast, and that article itself might get just as many views or reads as my podcast gets downloads. So you should also sponsor the blog post, maybe a different CPM, but that gets you exposure too. And I haven't really seen anyone do cross-platform advertising like that. I mean, maybe it's done. You know, Tim Ferriss in his blog post, he always mentions who the sponsors of his podcast are, but I don't know if they're paying to go on those emails. So I'm not sure if this is really done.
Right.
So that's ads. Again, I do mine through Midroll. We also had someone for a while who was calling up companies directly, but it didn't really seem to be like we were probably breaking even or losing money on that aspect of the business. Cause you know, you pay the person who's helping you and then you get money from the advertisers, and it was a lot of extra work and effort and it wasn't really worth it for me.
And also the sponsor as well, right?
Yeah. So we're separating out ads from sponsors. So sponsors are people who reach out directly or we reach out directly to, from the point of view of the listener, you might not be able to tell whether someone's an ad or a sponsor, but what is the difference between an ad or a sponsor? A sponsor might say, hey, you're doing this thing called Side Hustle Fridays. We will sponsor and buy and take up all the ad space on every Side Hustle Friday episode, but we don't want to have anything to do with all your other episodes. We'll sponsor Side Hustle Fridays. And for that, they might pay a premium to what a normal advertiser would pay. Plus, I don't have to cut in any middlemen or whatever. And so sometimes we get sponsors. We're not going out of our way to find sponsors at the moment, but I think that is a better way, particularly for niche podcasts, to get more money for an advertiser. If someone's a sponsor, they have a specific goal and purpose, like Jay, you were mentioning selling a product, so they'll pay more money even if you have a smaller audience.
Right.
And so those always work out well for us. It's just it's a lot of work to get them and court them and impress them and so on.
Right. And each sponsor has a different deal. Like they might want to negotiate with you like, hey, I want this on here, I want this on there. So sometimes sponsor pay you more money, but you know, like you also, spend more time trying to deal with them.
Yeah. And by the way, ads and sponsors will cancel you if you don't deliver results for them.
Yep.
So often when I'm reading an ad, I'll say, go to, Viagra.com/James to get 20% off. And they'll see how much sales they're getting from James. So in general, a good rule of thumb for anything in life really is be authentic and be honest. And I've rejected plenty of advertisers, only take advertisers that you enjoy the product of, or you believe in the product and the purpose of the product. So this way you could legitimately say, hey, check out whatever, Viagra, and try it with your spouse. I don't know. And sponsors even more so, because they're going to be taking up much more ad space. You really want to be a user of that product. So one sponsor for us recently was Outstanding Foods, which makes plant-based snacks, and I happen to love them. So I reached out to them and they said, sure, we'll sponsor. And I knew them personally as well. So I love the product. I eat it as their products as snacks all the time. So they were a great sponsor to have. Next level monetization. Oh, by the way, Jay, I think I'm scheduled for something in 1 minute.
I told her you'd be 10 to 15 minutes late, but I don't know APC, she hasn't seized the email yet though.
Okay, well, we'll find out. So next level on monetization. This is a critical level. I almost never see any podcaster doing this kind of monetization. And whenever I suggest this to anybody, they say, oh my gosh, why didn't we ever think of that? That's great. So for me, this is much better than ads, but again, it's a different style of work. It's not as passive as ads. Like when Midroll places an ad, they give me some bullet points and then I write or riff on the rest of the ad, and that's the extent of my work on it. So affiliate deals are, here's an example. If someone is selling a mattress, I might do an ad and it'll sound to the listener like the same as any other ad. So I might say, hey, get 50% off on a Casper mattress. Go to casper.com/James. This is not a real example, by the way. Casper was an advertiser on this podcast, but this wasn't an affiliate deal. I'm just describing how an affiliate deal will work. So this will sound to the listener like any other ad, but Casper is not paying for this ad. What happens is I'll say, you know, check out casper.com/James. And then there's software that tracks who is using that URL to actually buy a Casper mattress. And then Casper and I will have a deal where I'll get 20, 30, 50, 80% of the revenues depending on the deal. And so the good thing for the advertiser there is they take no risk. They don't have to spend any money upfront. I take the risk. So that's the benefit to the advertiser. The benefit to me is if I'm truly passionate about the product and sincerely passionate and authentically passionate, which you should always be, and I'm convincing to get people to buy it because I do a good ad read, I can make a lot more money than a typical ad. So here's an example. Let's say someone has a course on, you know, how to monetize. Here's a course on how to monetize or how to create your own e-commerce store. So I might say something like, you know, ecommercebiz.com/course/James. Check it out. All my listeners, first off, I have made money on e-commerce businesses. So have our guests, these guests in particular. This guest here made, you know, a gazillion dollars on building his or her e-commerce stores. If you really want to make if you really want to learn how to make your own e-commerce store as fast and as effectively as possible, go to ecommercestorebiz.com/James. And just for my listeners, you get 30% off. Boom. And so now let's say that course is $1,000, but that's okay because if you make a good e-commerce site, you might make $1 million. So and let's say 100 people buy, you know, out of the, you know, listeners I have, let's say just 100 people go to ecommercestorebiz.com/James and buy their course on building e-commerce stores, and the course is $1,000, that company gets $100,000 in revenues, and now I can track that. And so let's say the deal is 50-50. I get 50% of the revenues generated. On a single ad, I might make $50,000, which, you know, remember the example I used before. If you have a huge CPM of $100 on a regular ad and you have 50,000 downloads, and again, remember the average is 137, you're only making $5,000 on an ad. So if I have an opportunity with an affiliate deal to maybe make $50,000 in an ad or $100,000 in an ad, that's huge. So, you know, I don't do too many of those. I have to be super passionate about the product. The way I view an affiliate deal is I have to be so passionate about it that I don't even care about the deal. I want the founder of the company to come on my podcast and explain to everybody how they made $1 million making, you know, with an e-commerce store. I want it to be really educational for the listener. And of course, entertaining. And I wanted to provide a lot of value to help people. And then at the end, I can say, hey, you know, if you also want this course, you could get it. And I kind of read the ad. And then the affiliate deal is what the affiliate deal is. So I'm the podcaster. I take the risk, which I'm willing to do because I'm a huge believer. But like, for instance, I had this one, sometimes you make no money. I did this one affiliate deal with Tony Robbins. And I thought, man, everyone's going to get this. It's Tony Robbins and he's talking about real estate investing. And I really liked what he had. You know, I talked to his partner, Dean Graziosi, and I really said, oh, I'm not a real estate buyer, but I really like this guy's formula for real estate. I'd be happy to sell their Tony and Dean's course on this. So I mentioned it. And I don't know what we made yet. We made like zero on that, I think.
We made a couple hundred dollars, but like compared to all the artists that we have what? We have Kyle Allen's, we have the one about writing with John Morrow's.
Oh yeah, yeah. And we do well with those. I don't know why the Tony Robbins one didn't do better. You never really know. That's the problem. With affiliate deals, you never really know how much money you're gonna make. Sometimes it's a home run and sometimes it's zero, but in general, that's why you have to, I have to be a user of the product. I have to love it. I have to think it's going to provide huge value to the listeners. So, because I'm taking the risk too. I've got, it's got to provide, again, huge enough value that I'm willing to not even do this as an ad, but do it as a real podcast.
Yeah. And also like to have a successful affiliate deals, like you have to make sure whatever product you're doing it with has to coincide with the team of the podcast. So like for James Altucher Show, like it's all about learning and education. That's why like all the affiliate deals that we have done so far with Bill Petit, it's also a course on, you know, on frame control, persuasion. So like all the educational stuff did really well. And also to your point, another type of affiliate deals that you can do is, so I think John Lee Dumas mentioned this to us before on one of our Side Hustle Friday, is that let's say you mentioned some book in a podcast, right? So let's say someone came on, it's all about their book. And then you, on the footnote, you can, you know how Amazon let you do affiliate deals as well?
Yeah.
So you can
but
sign
those
up.
Affiliate deals, you only get 3%. That's a horrible affiliate deal. But to your, oh, go ahead to your point, because I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. So like to your, like it's not as much, but still like if you put the link in your podcast notes, you know, like, and then like people can click on it and buy it because they already heard the people. So the easiest way for them to buy the book is provide them the link. And then if they click your link, so at least you can get a little bit, you know, money here and there. That's extra money for you. For the podcast.
Right. So I keep those affiliate deals on the older podcasts. And so it's kind of making money while you sleep. So it might be the case that months from now, I'll still make money on one affiliate deal from a year ago. And right. it keeps on going. And right. And again, affiliate deals are hard to structure and you have to have an exceptional belief in the product. And you're also taking all the risk because that's space that I could have used for another ad. But let me ask you this, Jay, what software do we use to track? Do you know what software we use to track? You know, because you have to trust the other side, but
right.
since nobody trusts anybody, there's software that tracks how much money you're making on an affiliate deal. What software is that?
That I think David Newman would know more than me.
All right, let me see. I'm just going to Google it because I'll remember the name if I...
Well, yeah. So while you Google, like for me, like the all the affiliate deals that I have done, I just use their internal software. You're going to have more success if you do affiliate deals with people that you trust.
Yeah.
That you have a relationship with.
Yeah, like if you're doing an affiliate deal with someone you don't trust, there's no point in recommending their product. I'm not going to recommend the product of someone I don't trust.
Right.
Now, I would say that describes the range of kind of, let's call it ad space deals. Now, here's an opportunity. You can go to low volume podcasts that don't have relationships with like a mid-roll or anybody else or any other kind of podcast network. And here's a business idea that I don't think anybody's done. I can buy up all the inventory, say, of low volume niche podcasts, and then I can make an affiliate deal with someone and put those affiliate deals on as ads on all the podcasts that I bought the ad space for. So it's my ad space that I control on someone else's podcast. I'll put an affiliate deal in there, and then I make the difference between the money I make from the affiliate deal minus what I paid for all the ad space for all the different podcasters, and all the different podcasters have to read the ad for the affiliate deal I'm putting on there. So that's a business idea where it doesn't matter how big your podcast is. I can buy up the ad space on 100 different podcasts, put in, you know, here's, you know, learn how to make an e-commerce course with ecommercebizcourse.com, you know, / whatever. And I get all the affiliate money, but I've paid for the ad space, and it's all cheap ad space because it's on low volume podcasts that normally don't have ads. So that's just, that's not something I do, but that's a business idea. If anyone wants to do that, I think that's a solid business idea. You will make money that way. And it's an additional side hustle to what we're presenting here right now.
Right.
Now that's kind of, the ad category. The next category is Patreon. So Patreon, if you don't know what it is, it's a way for artists of any variety to set up their own page on Patreon, like patreon.com. I don't have a Patreon page, but I could be patreon.com/James. And people could subscribe to my Patreon if they like the podcast. So for instance, again, a lot of smaller podcasts that don't have ads, you might hear them say to their listeners, hey, if you like this podcast, please support us on patreon.com/, you know, James's Patreon page. And particularly for a lot of beginning podcasts, this might be a great way to make money. So, and then you have tiers, just like on Kickstarter. Oh, if you pay $5 a month, you have access to, you know, I don't know, I'll give you, send you a digital copy of my book. Or if you pay $100 a month, you get your name read on the podcast. If you pay $500 a month, I'll talk about whatever you want me to talk about for at least one episode a month, and on and on. Because I like to support the podcast that I like, I am a Patreon donator to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Whoa. Not all of those are podcasts, actually. So here's an example. Quillette, which is a website that I enjoy reading, I'm a Patreon fan of theirs, and so I give them a certain amount per month. Another one is the beatboxing instructor that I use, who's on lessonface.com. His name's Paul Arnett. I give him a certain amount per month. And then I think the rest of these are podcasts. So for instance, the Tim Dillon Show, which I love, I give a certain amount per month. Or you know, various comedian podcasts, because comedian podcasts often don't have a high CPM rate, so it's a little harder for them to get great advertisers. But let's go ahead.
I'm just curious, who do you pay more, History Hyenas or Tim Dillon?
History Hyenas. And I don't know why. I think it's because they put out more episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they put out a lot of episodes.
Also, they are friends of the podcast too.
Yeah. Both of them have been on, but I've been on their podcast twice, and they've been on our podcast twice or three times. Tim Dillon has been on here once. He's spoken about me on his podcast. But we have more of like a personal relationship with them. And
right.
And like Sherrod's Race Wars, I go on that all the time. He's been on ours a bunch of times.
Right.
But then there's just podcasts I enjoy, like Rich Voss. And I like the Voss and Bonnie McFarlane's. Bonnie McFarlane's been on this podcast, but they have a podcast called My Wife Hates Me. And there's actually, I just realized there's only 7 patrons. I'm one of the only 7 patrons of that.
But they should treat you like VP. But one thing I have to say about Patreon, is that Patreon also serves as an amazing marketing tool.
Yes, because they email all your patrons.
Yep.
And sometimes they pre-release, often actually, your subscribers on Patreon so they feel they're getting extra benefit. Often people release a podcast first or extra special material first on Patreon to their different tiers. So someone on one tier might get more content than someone on a lower tier, but it's a good way of creating more content and really paying attention to your top subscribers. I mean, I don't know why I don't do a Patreon. I feel funny having my hand out like that for money, but it's a good way to kind of identify who you're, you know, best listeners are and they're your most active listeners.
And also think about it. If you just start a podcast, you have let's assume you have zero budget. Like that's a free website for you. Like you don't have to pay for other people to design your website. Patreon can serve as your podcast website. You know what I mean?
Right. And so here's an example. And by the way, this is all public info. Like when I click on the Tim Dillon Show on Patreon, where I am a patron, I think, you know what also? I think I might be at the highest tier level. So you could only donate so much as the highest tier anyway.
Right.
But it tells you Tim Dillon has 11,151 patrons. Now remember I said on that other podcast they only had 7. So Tim Dillon has 11,151 patrons, which is huge, huge. And he makes, it's just Tim producing his show. And then he has a producer, Ben. So it's just Tim and Ben. And he makes, and he has advertisers. He has like a ton of advertisers. But just on Patreon alone, he makes $60,433 per month. And wow, he does release content just for Patreon members. Like I'm looking at it right now. He has a Patreon episode called The Rothschilds Kidnapped. And so that will never be one of the episodes of his podcast. It's just for Patreon members only. But still, $60,000 a month. Let me look at these other guys here. I never really looked at this.
Let's feel like His Three Highness did a lot, did like $30,000 a month or $20,000 a month too, right?
Yeah, so Race Wars has 69 patrons. I think when it's not a certain number, I can't see how much money he makes, or maybe that's a choice. Yeah, History Hyenas, they have 4,415 patrons and they make $35,762 a month. Right. So by the way, that's really good. What that means is, my guess is they make more money from Patreon than they would from just having advertisers. And Tim, right, since he has both advertisers and Patreon, my rough guess is he's probably making about $100,000 a month. And again, it's mostly just him and one audio engineer. And then let me see, what does my beatbox instructor, I am the patron, Quillette. So like, you don't have to be a podcast, you could be anything. They have 1,400 patrons and it doesn't say what they make per month. I guess that must be a setting. I don't know. Maybe I should start. You know why I don't want to start a Patreon? Is I don't want to make Patreon only content. I like making content that's available right for anywhere. Oh yeah, I like this other podcast, Whiskey Ginger. It's Andrew Santino, who's he's been on a bunch of my favorite shows, and he's a good comedian. He has 313 patrons. Doesn't say how much he makes.
Yeah, and also just a heads up, not just a heads up, but like also like there are a couple like company that actually approach us of doing like just subscribes only podcasts, but I think we rejected them because we want to make our content available to everyone.
Yeah, some podcast networks, like Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, like Luminary.
Luminary, yep.
They're a network, meaning they have a bunch of podcasts on and they pay the podcasters even an upfront amount, like in advance, and then they make money through subscriptions, sort of Patreon-like subscriptions, or maybe they control your right Patreon or something like that. So right, yeah, there's various business models that are in between kind of like a radio show network and Patreon and podcasting. But suffice to say, I do think Patreon's a great service. I am not going to do it, but not for any... I just don't want to... I like making all the content available to everyone.
Right.
But particularly for niche podcasts that don't have a lot of listeners, or for just starting podcasts, or for podcasts that are in categories with where the CPM rate is not high. So remember, if you have a podcast about, I don't know, investing, your CPM might be higher than a comedy podcast. So you won't get as much money from advertisers if you're a comedy podcast than if you're an investment podcast. So better for you to do Patreon. And right, so there's a lot of reasons to do Patreon, and you could do both Patreon and ads. So yeah, now, next category.
Sorry, James, I think you have to go on to other people's podcast now. We can come back later if you want to.
Well, how long have we been going?
50 minutes.
All right. How about Jay, we
one,
and by the way, let's keep recording this because this is how we make decisions.
Yep.
How about Jay, we put this on Side Hustle Fridays because that's in 2 days, and then let's do a part two, but instead of using that next Friday, because I feel like it's still just one topic, maybe we can put a part two out on Sunday. You want to do that?
Or Monday, so we have more time. Like, so let's say if you record later, so like we will have more time to edit.
All right, so just to summarize, we discussed briefly why one should do a podcast. There's other reasons, but those were the main ones for me. We discussed
the equipment,
best practices for the equipment, and we talked about ads and how ads work and where to find advertisers. We talked about sponsors. We talked about affiliate deals. And we also gave, and this is why it's great that this is Side Hustle Fridays, we also gave a completely different side hustle that makes use of the concepts behind affiliate deals and podcasts, but you don't have to do your own podcast to make money on affiliate deals. You just have to buy ad space on a bunch of podcasts and then put the affiliate deals you work out on those podcasts. I don't know if that all makes sense, but we talked about a good side hustle idea that will make money if you do it. Like if you start that today, within a month, you'll be making good, consistent money and you'll be making money while you sleep. Then we talked about Patreon. And I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 other ways to make money for podcasts. And I honestly don't know many companies that do any of these other 8 ways. So stay tuned for part 2. You're listening to this on a Friday. Part 2 will come out on Monday. And I'm going to jump off and go on another podcast. Jay, I will talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Talk to you later. No worries. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.